Welcome to another author event at the Poison Pen Bookstore. I'm John Charles, and tonight the Poison Pen is honored and delighted to have with us author Maxim Martineau, whose new book is Shadows of the Lost. Before we begin tonight, I do have a few brief commercial messages. If this is the first time you're here at the Poison Pen, we'd like to welcome you, whether it's in person or virtually. I would like to suggest that if you want to know who's coming to the Poison Pen in the future, the best way to do that is to sign up for our e-news. It's real easy to do. Just stop at the front desk on your way out. Someone can sign you up, and each week you'll find out who's coming to the Poison Pen, as well as information about new and forthcoming books that you might like to read. I'd also like to let those tuning in virtually know that we do have a few copies left of Maxim's new book. So if you'd like a signed copy, don't delay. Give us a call or go online and we can ship one out to you right away. Now I'd like to welcome Maxim Martineau.
Thank you. That's a very warm welcome.
Thank you for joining us tonight. I'm always fascinated by who an author was before they started writing and becoming published. So what can you tell us about Maxim?
Well, I was a studious child. No, I kind of grew up actually writing stories as a child because I suffered from pretty intense night terrors. And so I used writing as a way to sort of deal with what I was experiencing and getting it out there. So through writing, it helped me like grow into who I am. So I've always sort of been writing, but I didn't always think I would be a writer. I actually went to school for animal behavior. I was a biology major first, which if you've read Kingdom of Exiles, makes sense because it's all about magical creatures and animals and all of that fun jazz. So.
And you got an English degree?
I did. Yeah, I switched. I gave up at organic chemistry.
When did you know you wanted to become a writer, and what was your path to publication like?
I think I decided I wanted to become a writer when I realized it was something I could do in addition to like my everyday like life. I always was told growing up that, oh, well, don't get an English degree or don't do this. You can't survive off this. You will never, you know, you'll never make it. And I was like, well, hold my beer. But then like I took that and I was like, well, maybe if I like still do something with my English degree. So for my day job, I do marketing and writing and that kind of stuff. And then I was able to allocate time where I could still use those creative juices toward my writing outside of work. And I realized I could make it work. I don't sleep a lot, but I do make it work. I hope.
Your first book was Kingdom of Exiles. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
And your first couple books kind of took a curious path because they were published, the first one as adult, and then you tell us the story behind the story.
The story behind the story. It's very interesting, and publishing is a weird industry. I wish I knew all the answers to everything about it because I could have been way more prepared going into it. Now maybe I am. But so I had a very quick submission journey. For anyone listening or aspiring to be an author, submission is when you take your book out and your agent, or you do it yourself, however you choose to do it, goes to a publisher and your book gets picked up and bought, and then they agree to publish it in 11, 17, however many months. And I worked with my agent. It got picked up very quickly because she had an existing relationship with the editor at the publishing house and like knew that our book was going to click. And I love my editor. We do fantastic work together, in my opinion. When they picked me up, they purchased Kingdom of Exiles as an adult mass market romance. Now, for anyone who doesn't know what that means, mass market is the tinier little version books that you see at like maybe a Target or an airport. That it's like very traditional for romance, very strange for fantasy romance, in my particular opinion. But because that's the imprint within my publisher was the romance sector, that's how they chose to market it. And it was getting a lot of early excited reviews and positive reviews, and everything was going really well. But then when it hit shelves, we found that we were either getting miscategorized as young adult romance or just young adult fantasy in general. And the romance readers were having a hard time connecting with it as romance because the mass market cover is like a very strong, super empowered, like Wonder Woman female in front of a magical creature, which is like, I liked it, but like in terms of a romance book, when you go to a shelf and what you expect to see, it just wasn't getting clicked. So Barnes & Noble approached us and said, hey, or maybe we approached them. I don't know who, Those are semantics that are beyond me. But they wanted to do a special edition YA release of Kingdom of Exiles because it was getting miscategorized so much as young adult. And so we did. In December of that same year, we released Kingdom of Exiles with the cover that's up there that you know now. And because of the success of that, my publisher decided to continue Kingdom of Exiles, The Frozen Prince, and The Shattered Crown through the young adult sector. Those covers all the same. So now the way that I kind of like let people know the difference is just like, oh, the original mass market version is the special edition, because the rest of the series are not marketed as adult, like mass market romance. So it is interesting because it is a, I don't think that's traditional by any means. And it has made marketing rather funky sometimes. Lots of explanation as you just went through. And then Shadows is the same style, at least in terms of like the trade paperback and everything, but it's new adult. So a little bit more elevated in terms of like the romantic content, if you will.
What can you tell us about Shadows of the Lost, your new book?
So Shadows of the Lost is a spinoff series. Kingdom of Exiles, The Frozen Prince, and The Shattered Crown are the completion of the Beast Charmer series. And Shadows of the Lost starts with the perspective of one of the secondary characters in that series. So what I like to tell people is, yes, you can pick up Shadows of the Lost and read it, fine. Like, it's a new plot line, new villain, new everything. You'll be fine. You might get a deeper understanding of some pre-existing relationships if you were to read the first three books, but you can just as easily pick it up and start fresh from here. In particular, Shadows of the Lost is about Cost, one of the aforementioned secondary characters, and his love interest, Gage. And they are both undead. One is an assassin. One was a former beast charmer who is now trying to reconcile with his existence as an undead assassin who can walk with the shadows and essentially kill people. He doesn't feel right about that. He can't access his beasts in the way that he used to. The beast charmer world, they sort of, the beasts that once you tame them live in this sort of very euphoric realm and are very happy, and they can come to the charmer's aid at any point. But when Gage died, he lost his connection with that realm and effectively lost relationships with hundreds of his creatures whom he loved very dearly. So a lot of his grief that he deals with in this book is rectifying with his new path in life and inadvertently blaming his love interest for the reason he died. So they don't like each other very much, but they love each other, and they don't want to be around each other, but they do. And they're trying to figure out why nothing is working for Gage and his shadows, and it's either reluctance, a new villain, or a little of both. I'm going to go for the third option on that one. It's a little more.
I read somewhere that you had written your three books prior to Shadows of the Lost. Now you wrote this book, and you thought because you had been writing in this world for so long, this would be an easy book to write, but it turned out to be the hardest.
It was the hardest book, for sure. I guess I might caveat and say that the next book, which I've already written and is currently with my publisher, was also very difficult, but for completely different reasons than this one was difficult. This book was super difficult for me because, without giving too many spoilers, in case you haven't read the first three and you want to finish them, to me it felt like such a complete ending, and the bad guy was so bad. And they're like, come up with a new bad guy. And I'm like, how do you get more bad than what I already did? And I really struggled with that. And then on top of it, there's a lot happening in like Gage's like self-identity and self-worth and whatnot that like really resonated for me as I was writing this. You know, I was coming out of postpartum depression. I was coming into my own like gender identity and like all of this stuff. And it's just like, yes, Gage didn't have those same problems as me. He didn't just have a child. But like, there was this whole sense of like learning to embrace your new self and be okay with that. So it was very difficult for me to get through some of that. So yeah, that was why that was tough.
In addition to just writing the book, yeah.
No, yeah. In addition to just, you know, putting words on the paper.
I also read somewhere that you said angst can come in many fashions. What does angst look like for the characters in your new book?
Angst can come in many fashions, and I think it's important to understand all the different levels of that, because when you hear like, oh, it's an angsty book, it's not just like, I want to kiss you, I don't want to kiss you, maybe I do, but like, obviously, yes, there is that, but like, there's that whole internal angst that I was just like mentioning with Gage, is like this, I want to be this person or do this thing, and I'm unable to do it because I don't like that part of myself. And then coming to terms with that and realizing that like, oh, I am a beautiful person, I am a whole person, and all I needed was a little ounce of trust. And gaining that trust is tough. And so there's angst in not getting into that situation. And then on cost side, there's angst because there's so much emotional baggage from that guy. He's like a touchstone of emotional baggage. And I love that. I like to torture my characters. He's the one I've hurt the most. sorry, cost. He has so much pent up fear, and that's how angst presents for him. It's just like this, and it prevents him from moving forward. And so they're both caught in this perpetual state of angst stemming from different significant events in their past, and they have to individually overcome them in order to come together.
You've been writing in a world that you created now, and you've created one series and you're starting another. As an author, how do you manage the practicalities, I guess, of world building and keeping series characters straight?
Lots and lots of appendixes. I actually joke that I have not written 4 books, I've written 5, because the at the back of every book you'll find a bestiary, which has a complete and total list of all of the beasts that you see in the book. And because I can't keep things just simple, it's not just like a list, they're descriptions. It's their description, their rank, what they look like, how you tame them, and in some instances, a secondary method of taming, because why not? So that was tough. That is the way that I kept those traits separate. And that always became kind of difficult when like my characters would get into a situation where I was like, oh, they have this beast, they should be saved. But maybe I needed to put like a time limit on like this power or like something. So I have to go back and figure it out. The characters were a little bit easier for me outside of the obvious. Make sure you don't change their eye color, you know, 2/3 of the way through the book. Because it's been long enough that I really do feel like I know them very closely. And I can tell you why Gage wears gloves for 2/3 of the book and why there will never be a scene where he doesn't have gloves. And there will always be something in there about that. Right? I just know at this point, but it didn't start that way. I had really in-depth character sheets and the ever-evolving bestiary at the back, which will continue to grow with every book.
Did you work with someone at your publisher for the map of your world that comes in the book? Because that's fascinating.
Yes, yes and no. A little of both. So I am not an artist, but I like to pretend. And I like to doodle, and I like to draw, and I like to do all of that stuff. And when I was writing Kingdom of Exiles, I knew that I wanted travel to be realistic. And I always have a really big pet peeve of reading books and characters getting from one place to the next in like a span of a day. And then the next time that happens, it takes them like 2 weeks. And there's no like logical explanation as to why. And I didn't want it to be used as like a plot device. I wanted it to be realistic. So when I was drafting Kingdom of Exiles, I actually drew my map, put on key points. And then, you know, because whenever you're drafting and you should be drafting, you're not actually drafting because you're procrastinating. I went and found this little online program where you can design a map for free. So I designed a map for free one day and like built it out and made it all like cute. And so when Kingdom of Exiles got picked up, they asked like, hey, what do you want to include in the front of the book? I was like, well, here you go. And so they took it and they beautified it because I'm again not an artist, and it looks much better than just like the digital paint version I did. No shade on that, I just am not talented. So that's how that came together.
Speaking of art, Shadows of the Lost includes a couple special inserts. What was the idea behind that? Can you talk about how they came to be?
I asked for it. I am obsessed with art. I love art. Some of my favorite stuff to read is manga, and in general, I like to watch anime, and I just think that art is an incredible way to give visual representation to the characters that are in my head. And so when I went through Kingdom of Exiles and that whole series, I actually reached out to, her name's Therese. Her handle is at Aurica Art. And I said, hey, I really want, just for my own sake, because I want it, and it's framed in my office, and that's what I wanted, a picture of Nock and Lena from the first series. And then, like, you know, I sent it to my publisher as, like, a thank you and some other stuff. And so when Shadows came around, they're like, hey, should we do something like this? And I was like, yes, let's do it, please. And they are like, let's do one for cost Engage, obviously. And then they surprised me. They're like, we're going to do another one of Knock and Lena, like a little bit later in their like relationship. So that's what's in there. I'm excited about that.
Before we forget, there's another special kind of element to Shadows of the Lost. You have committed to making a donation to a particular charity that means a lot to you. Can, especially for those that are tuning in virtually, talk about that, this particular organization, why it's important and what you're doing, because you're really putting a financial commitment.
I am, yes. So I made a commitment to donate $1 for every pre-order, regardless of where it's purchased, to the Trevor Project, up to $1,000, because I can't think of an organization that moves me more in terms of how much they support and affirm and celebrate the lives of LGBTQ youth, especially with everything that's happening in the world today. And so I was super grateful when the Poison Pen, you know, agreed to join me in this donation as well, because, I mean, I can't imagine being a teenager, dealing with issues of gender identity, and not having a support system, and feeling so lost and helpless. And this organization steps in and helps support, you know, our youth. And I think, in, no matter what your journey looks like, even if, you know, you do have a support system at home, like, it, not everyone does. And that, I don't know, I wanted it to be important, because I'm fully aware that I am a white woman in a heteronormative relationship. I am publishing in June. It is Pride Month. My book is about two gay men. And I wanted intensely for some sort of proceeds or the benefit of it to go to the community at large. So
it's a wonderful thing that you've done. Now let's switch gears and talk a little bit in general about your life as a writer, because you write during the day as your day job. Do you edit also a little bit? Or
a little. I mean, I used to edit a bit more heavily. I used to be a content editor. And then as I shifted a little bit more to the creative writing within my work, that becomes the primary. But anyone who's a writer within that sphere will tell you that they all edit as well, or we edit each other's work or something to that nature. Not to the extent of what I do here. That's different.
Does that impact you when you're doing your creative writing? Do you sometimes find yourself thinking, when you're working with your fictional editor, I really know more than you?
No, absolutely not. And that is solely because my editor is like the best thing since sliced bread. I value her opinion so much. I don't think I've ever had a stat, or a stat being like when she submits something to be changed, I have the opportunity to say stat, which means no, I'm keeping this. I've never once done that to her. I also just think it's because she understands my work really well. And usually her edits are more like, hey, this isn't working. What do you think about this? Or let's talk about this. So there's a lot of room for like brainstorming and finding ways around the problem versus just like, this is wrong, change this. Because I probably wouldn't be as receptive to that for sure. Occasionally she'll throw the, I always make this joke too, because I actually had a t-shirt made out of it. She'll just comment on something that says awkward, semicolon, please revise. And I'm like, that's a great t-shirt. I'm very awkward. Please revise me. And so I made a t-shirt out of it. But yeah, no, I actually don't feel like I know more than her at all, because I think editing in like the world of like commercial marketing, which leans heavily on like AP style and like the way that you market to the audience in short form content, is way different than what you would do in long form books like this. So her knowledge of Chicago manual style will forever be better than mine, because I only do AP during the day.
When you're starting a book project, how does that evolve? Do you always know right at the beginning, this is the roadmap? Do you have just a glimmer of an idea? Does it change from book to book?
I would say 90% of the time, I don't know what I'm doing. Sometimes, in the case of Kingdom of Exiles, for example, that one was hard because I actually had a dream. I get a lot of my book ideas from my dreams. And I had a dream where I sat down with Nock in a wheat field. Don't know why. Doesn't really play into the book at all. And he told me his entire life story. And I woke up, I was like, this is fascinating. I have to write this. This doesn't make sense to be book one. So then I had to like table that and then like write a book that led into his story, because The Frozen Prince was largely his story. So that was interesting, because I knew the characters very immediately off the bat. I knew all of them, knew what I wanted them to do, how I wanted them to interact. The secondary characters surprised me a little bit, but for the most part, I knew. But I had no idea how I was going to get from the very beginning to where like Nox part and then the end of the series went. And the same thing for Shadows. Because I already had this established like character built, like I knew how they were going to interact. I knew all this, but then I had this whole problem of like, what happens next? The series ended. This is a spinoff. Who's the bad guy and why is this happening? And fortunately, I kind of knew it was coming. So I was able to layer some pieces in the third book to sort of to pull off from for those who continued to read all of it. But yeah, most of the time I don't know. I am not a plotter in the slightest bit. I tend to write fully developed characters and I let them surprise me because I like to be surprised because then I hope my readers are surprised, which is always a fine line to walk because it usually means I have a lot of edits because they're like, oh, well, in this chapter they did this, but why were they, you know, but that's my style. So it works.
You've been writing for a while now. If you had the opportunity to go back in time when you were first starting out, what advice would you give yourself about the writing journey?
Oh, I think I would let myself know that it's okay that it takes time and to write the story you want, because no matter how much you try to hit like the market, it's constantly shifting, it's constantly moving. And I remember the first few years that I was like querying, trying to get an agent, because I wrote a couple manuscripts before Kingdom got picked up. And I was so disappointed and I was so sad and I had to kill so many books and I just thought, oh, I'm not good enough. And at the end of the day, that's probably true in some instances, right? My writing level has changed from when I first went on sub right out of college to now. But largely it's about like learning, getting a community, being okay with where you're at, and like understanding that at the end of the day, you can't force like a round peg into a square hole. Like just write what you want to write. And if it's the right thing and the right amount of talent and heart goes into it, you're good. And then also like if someone rejects you, that's not a reflection on you, because so many agents, publishers, whatever, they pick up what they think they can sell, not what they think is good. And that's a huge difference that it took me a long time to learn. And they might even already have an author on their band, like in their little, I don't know, in their warehouse, who's writing the same thing as you. And it doesn't matter. As much as they love you, they have to support that other author who they've already picked up. So,
how would you describe the flavor of your writing to someone who's never read your books?
I once had it described as medium salsa. Medium to mild salsa. And I thought that that was great. And I still think it's great. I love the analogy. I once did a panel with six authors, which was a lot. And it was at San Diego Comic-Con. And I had me, Katie Roberts, Scarlett St. Clair, Piper, and one other. Oh, man, I feel terrible. I can't remember the other girl's name. She's fantastic. And it was sort of a mix between adult and young adult authors. And they had us, I don't think they did this intentionally, but they seated us in range from spiciest to least. And I was right in the middle. And of course, Katie Roberts is, you know, first. Yeah, right. First. Like jalapeno, ghost, chili, pepper, whatever you want to call it. Scarlett's right up there. And then it was me and the two other YA authors who didn't know what they had gotten themselves into by joining this panel. And the girl at the end is the one who I give full credit to, the girl whose name I can't remember, which makes me just hate myself a little. I'm terrible with names. She's the one who said, and she got to speak last, of course, I feel. So she sold this. She goes, well, I hate being the only one at the table who feels like mild salsa. And I was like, oh, that's great. So great. So I would say I'm a medium to high. Depends on which series you pick up and which version you pick up, as is mentioned by my weird publishing journey. If you manage to get the very first edition of Kingdom of Exiles, it's more like Scarlet level. If you got the first three, it's slightly medium to mild salsa. And cost is not ghost chili pepper, but like spicy. Your tongue might need a little milk afterward, we'll say.
what is Maxim like as a reader? What can you tell us about your journey as a reader? Did you always read fantasy and romance? Did you come to it late in life? Who were some of your benchmark books?
Yeah, I always read fantasy. I grew up on fantasy. Like, as a kid, my mom read me The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Obviously, she also read me through the Harry Potter series until I just stopped waiting for her because I wanted to read them first and I didn't want to wait for her. And then just continued on with fantasy. And I remember always, like, I'd read the book and then I'd go to bed and be like, I wonder why they didn't kiss. And I got really upset that there wasn't more, like, romantic representation in those early young adult fantasy books. So that's what I always wanted to write, whether it was young adult or adult, as I knew that I wanted fantasy with romance. So for me, one of the benchmark series, I remember I was subbing a different book to my non-agent at the time. And it was a fantasy romance. And I remember Sarah Mass's book came out, had just come out. And A Court of Thorn and Roses. I didn't read the Throne of Glass series. But A Court of Thorn and Roses came out and I read it and I was like, oh my God, it can be done. It can be done and it can be done well. And she is, of course, doing fantastic. And I had so much hope at that point to keep writing the story that I wanted to write because I was starting to get a little disillusioned at the time. And now it's like a great genre and it's taking off. So I'm super happy about that.
How can readers learn more about your books? What social media platforms are you on? I believe you're now a makeup TikTok influencer.
That was a short stint, but yes, I did for a little bit. That was a COVID venture when I was bored at my house, locked indoors. I started doing book covers as makeup on my face, like recreating the covers on my face. So I did a little bit of that on Instagram and a little bit of that on TikTok, but I only did like 3 or 4 because I'm a terrible content creator because it's a full-time job and I have a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old and a full-time job and I'm an author. So I was like, oh, I don't have enough time for this. Let's just be a lurker. So I am on Instagram and I am on TikTok. Technically, I'm on Twitter. I rarely visit Twitter. It is like an updates only and if that kind of situation. Instagram, I'm just starting to get back into, and TikTok, I am trying to get into, but that is like the most heavily content created based platform. And I'm like, this is exhausting.
What's the biggest challenge for you as an author in marketing?
That. It's that. And it's, it is honestly getting your name out there because there's only so much you can do. And You can go and watch other people's TikToks who are really great at it. Like Katie Robert and Scarlett are both fantastic in their social presence. The things that they do well, though, are harder for, I think, new authors to get into because they do a lot of, like, Q&As or a lot of, like, Katie will tell you about her day, which is fabulous to just watch. She's just a fun personality to watch. But, like, or Q&As or answering questions about books and whatnot. But those are great content pieces if you have an established audience who are asking you those questions. If you don't, it's harder to just kind of like throw it out into the universe and hope people are actually digesting that content. So it's a hard game to follow. You can hope that you get picked up and go viral and then build off that. Or you can just keep plugging away a little at a time and pull your hair out while you do it.
Speaking of marketing, you can never really underestimate the importance of a title and a cover. How much input do you have? Because you have some really great
I do. Books. I'm happy with the covers. But to your point, there's only so much you can say and do. And like the Kingdom of Exiles is a perfect use case of like what can happen or what cannot happen, right? And I liked both covers, but it just depends on where the market's at the time and what was shifting. And then Barnes & Noble shifted to the independent seller market or how they sell their books. And things can get lost. And then it's kind of wild. And when you get picked up by a publisher, you might get like a cursory, like, hey, this is what we're doing. Like, what do you think? But it's not like there are 5 options to pick from. It's typically like, here's this. Is there any glaring issue with it? And you're like, well, no. Thankfully, I liked all mine. I've talked to other authors who were less than pleased with the stuff that's come out. I know a few lately, too, with the whole AI-generated covers and whatnot has been a thing. Unfortunately, if mine are AI-generated, I'm unaware of it. But you don't get a lot of say. I was fortunate in being able to see bunches of like iterations and thankfully liked all of them. And I 100% credit it to having a really good relationship with my editor, because she knows me, she knows what I like, she knows the content, and she loves my content. So when she helps in those meetings for pitching like the cover and the titles and all of that, I know she has my best interest. So I've never received something that I was like, oh, don't publish it like that. Like, fortunately. We are in the middle of title testing the next book, though, and that's fun because nobody knows what Tanaya meant, myself included. I, for the record, you heard it here first, I suggested the title be called Chaotic Himbo Energy. It is not going well. I don't know what the next book is titled yet, but that was my petition.
Now that you've mentioned it, can you tell us anything about the next book that's coming?
Can. So the next book, Chaotic Himbo Energy, picks up like days after Shadows finishes. So it won't be like a big time lapse or anything. And while the plot is the same throughout all three books and the villain that they face is the same, I say that like I know what the third book is going to do, but I don't always know. I do, but I don't. Don't hold me to that one. The perspectives change. So like this is very much in the perspective of Cost and Gage, with a few other chapters from different characters' perspectives in there. And that's intentional so that you get to know those characters before you're popped into their point of view in the following books. So next book is Calum. And if you've read the first three books, you know who he is. He is chaotic himbo energy personified with a lot of anger issues and a lot of mommy issues. And his love interest, who I'm not going to reveal because you may or may not have picked up on it. So, but yeah, the plot line continues. The big baddie you meet in the end of Shadows, you meet in the next book. That carries through. That won't change. That's not going to change. You can hold me to that one.
Any thought about going back to YA, or is that for future?
Might be for future. It's interesting because I think the line between YA and like new A, adult, however you want to call it, is very blurred. You have people like Sarah Mass, who released ACOTAR and it was a new adult book, but constantly shelved as young adult, constantly in YA book boxes. I mean, she had a lot of like the press around that. And that's literally what happened to Kingdom of Exiles. So I think I will always write the type of books that I'm currently writing. They will likely not have parent figures in them. They will likely always have some sort of fantasy romance element in them. If I come up with a concept that leans itself more toward YA, then sure, we might push it that way. But I really like romance. Like, I really like romance. Like, A Court of Mist and Fury is my, like, all-time one of my faves. And so I will always try and write around probably that age group. It's always funny in fantasy, though, because ages are weird. I mean, you can be in love with someone who's 300 years old and be 16 and nobody cares. So.
You mentioned new adult and young adult. And for those that are tuning in that might not be familiar with that, can you kind of shorthand it or tell people what that really is?
Yeah, I mean, the line's blurry, but young adult is like 16, sometimes 18 and younger. Depends on your level of spice. By spice, I mean sexy times. For anyone who's not familiar with the salsa analogy, and generally in young adult, you don't have strong parental influences. That's one of the main key things, because it gives the young adult MC a lot of opportunity to grow and discover themselves without parental influence. That's pretty common in young adult literature. New adult is strange because I don't understand new adult fantasy, quite frankly. It's 18 and over. And I, in a true new adult romance situation, or maybe just new adult fiction, I'm not really sure. I don't read a lot of just new adult fiction, but new adult romance tends to be more like 18 to 30, 18 to 25. It's like you're just discovering yourself. You don't have your parents because you're out in the world doing your thing. It's very similar. But you're like in college, you're stepping into your own self-discovery. You have a lot more agency. You can do a lot more things. Which to me just tracks in general with adult fantasy, because there are no like traditional like age ranges the same way that you do with like young adult and new adult in like a real world setting. That's why new adult fantasy is strange to me. It's like, what am I? And maybe there is a there's a story out there about a witch who's like in college and doesn't know what she's doing with her life and is working a dead end job and has bad boyfriends. Probably. That would be my new adult fantasy.
I think that's Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
That's Sabrina the Teenage Witch. There you go. You got it.
I think we have some time for questions from your fans, if any of them might.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to ask you, you semi-answered this with at least one of your books. You said you suffered from night terrors when you were younger. So are a lot of your characters in your books reflected from actual dreams or terrors that you had in your past, or most of them?
So it's interesting because I don't call them night terrors anymore because I'm not as scared of them as I used to be as a kid. But all of my characters, minus maybe Lena, are reflections of dreams or like somehow some aspect of my dream. For sure, Nock, 100% Nock was a dream manifestation that I put to life. Some of the monsters or the darker things, definitely, 100%. So like there are some monsters specifically in Shadows that have like a lot of darker attributes or a lot of, especially the shadows in general, as described from Kingdom of Exiles all the way through, are pretty dark and cold. And one of my worst nightmares as a kid was just a complete blank white slate with a shadow that just was like very sketchy and like just kept moving. And it was terrifying to me. It was horrifying. And one of my favorite things that I did with the shadows throughout the series is Lena's perception of them, as well as in this particular book, Gage's perception of them, as being this horrifying thing, but slowly transitioning to something beautiful. So like that's definitely the arc. Yeah, that's the arc for Gage. Like he's like very upset with this new existence. Lena was always kind of fascinated by them, terrified for sure at first, and then grew to love them because of who she fell in love with. And Gage now has them thrust upon him, very similar to how I did, and was just at first from a distance before he died. Spoiler. But you obviously, if you're reading Shadows, he's undead. Sorry. I mean, before he died, he thought they were interesting. And then once he got to like have them, terrified in his own way of them. So yeah, for sure. That came from my dreams. Yes. Yeah. I have lots of journals from when I was a kid that are both scary and illuminating. I remember once my mom came to me and said, "I'm sorry." She didn't realize the full scope of like what I was dealing with sometimes. She's like, "I read this and I did not realize how dark your brain was." And I was like, "Oh, well, it's good now, but it was at the time a little much." But I didn't know how to talk about it either. Writing was really cathartic for me.
Other questions?
All right.
I think they all want to meet you in person.
Well, that's fine too. Fine. I get it.
I'd like to thank Maxim Martineau for coming for her new book, Shadows of the Lost. Those of you attending in person and those of you online will like to see you back again at the Poison Pen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.